Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Jobs, 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 jobs. You cannot say it enough.
Finally, our leadership is focusing on jobs. You just heard Nancy Pelosi. Here's Harry Reid.
The American people need a message.
Presidential advisor.
The message that they need is that we're doing something about jobs.
Advisor Christine Romer.
It's jobs, jobs, jobs.
Even the president himself.
Jobs must be our number one focus.
And it is in the media today. If you flip through the papers or watch TV, everyone else is talking about jobs today. It's overwhelming. So let's dig into this and figure out exactly how we're going to make jobs come back. What? I'm sorry, what? Oh, my producer's talking in my ear. Wrong jobs? What? Computers? Oh. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, yes, of course. The jobs everyone is buzzing about today is Steve Jobs, who announced his resignation as Apple CEO last night. And you've no doubt been hearing about his many accomplishments, the iPad, iPod, iPhone, iTunes. These are generally regarded as triumphs of both computing and design, but they are also seen as extensions of Steve Jobs' particular vision and his particular leadership style. And that's what we'll focus on now, in all seriousness, in addition to talking about what is next for Apple, the impact of Steve Jobs on our country, our culture, our world. Ken Oletta writes the Annals of Communication series for The New Yorker and is a longtime staff writer there. His most recent book is Googled, The End of the World as We Know It. Hi, Ken. Welcome back to WNYC.
Morning. Thanks, Brian.
I know Steve Jobs is always shrouded in mystery and that only people who work with him closely are supposed to know exactly what he's like as a CEO. But as best you can assess, what is the Steve Jobs leadership style?
Well, it's certainly micromanagement. But beyond that, and more important than involving himself in every detail when necessary, he is a perfectionist, and if he is not satisfied, he will say no. And he's not self-conscious about being a pain in the neck to people and saying no to people.
All the leadership management books say don't be a micromanager?
They do, but it's worked for Steve Jobs. And you know, you could make the argument, and his people would make the argument with some fairness, that the Steve Jobs who was in the early Apple, who created Apple, and who was then fired in the mid-'80s, was much more of a micromanager than he became when he came back in 1996. And there's some truth to that. But nevertheless, he was persnickety. I mean, if he didn't like the antenna or didn't like the design or didn't think it functioned properly or thought it was too complicated, he would throw it out. And he would say, "You guys don't know what you're doing. Get out of here." And that those standards that he set are one of the many reasons, I think, that Apple creates the brilliant products it has created.
Listeners, anybody can call, but if you're a CEO or manager, how does this align with your leadership style? Have you felt yourself learning from Steve Jobs just by reading about him? 212-433-WNYC, Steve Jobs as a model for leaders everywhere, or maybe just unique to himself and you can't replicate this? 212-433-WNYC. Does he sound like the kind of boss you'd want to work for? They say the cult of Apple. 212-433-9692 or anything else about this. The Wall Street Journal, Ken Oletta, compiled some typical Steve Jobs quotes this morning, both on his design approach and his leadership style. Point: customers can't tell you about the next breakthrough. He also said it's not the consumer's job to know what they want. Point: real artists ship. In other words, you need to end up with a product that you can ship out the door. Point: my job is not to be easy on people. My job is to make them better. So similar to what you were just saying.
He was a man of enormous self. He is a man of enormous self-confidence.
Yeah, let's not kill him yet.
Yeah, right. And the truth is, he never did a market research. He never did a poll to determine what the public might or might not like in a product, because he believed they, as the quote you just read a moment ago suggests, that the public couldn't know what they would like until they were given an opportunity to share it. And like the early pioneers in movies or television who went with their quote golden gut, he went with his gut, And his gut turned out to be pretty prescient.
We asked on Facebook today, would you work for someone like Steve Jobs, brilliant, successful, but with a singular vision and sometimes prickly personality? And are you like that? And Ralph wrote, it depends. Is he a jerk when you do something helpful, like my boss is? Shannon says, I am so like that, but it has never worked for me. Probably need to work on that singular vision, brilliance, and success rate before unleashing the prickly. Zora wrote, the world needs more people like him. Zuckerberg, too. No amount of happy group team building and positive blah, blah, blah beats singular vision. And Peter writes, visionaries always seem to be like that. It is very difficult to be exceptionally gifted and relate easily to people who slow you down, I imagine. My analogy is to favorite musicians like Tom Waits or Prince or Elvis Costello or even Fritz Reiner. Impossible, maddening, horrible bosses who hire people to realize a singular vision only they see completely. So Ken, as a longtime reporter on the moguls of the world, does that all ring true to you?
Well, what rings true to me, yes, is that in an age when everyone talks about you need a collaborative culture, Steve Jobs didn't create a collaborative culture. He created a culture where he was the autocrat. He was in charge. And he did recruit amazingly talented people. But he was in charge, and he scared the hell out of people.
Did he design? I mean, was the iPod?
No. He had Jonathan Ives and others. I mean, he had brilliant people he recruited who had a great sense of design. But he had a great sense of design. He was a man who, he was like a five-tool baseball player. He was both an inventor, a creator, a product person, but he was also a very good businessman and a very good leader. And unlike, say, if you go to Washington today and you say, where's the leadership? You know, the Congress and the president and are fighting and no one seems to want to alienate a core constituency. Steve Jobs was unafraid to alienate people.
So iPad, iPod, iPhone, iTunes. Here's Adina in Irvington, who owns an IHOP. Right, Adina?
Yes, I remember you.
Adina, I remember you. You called in during the big snowstorm, didn't you?
Yes, oh my God.
And you were feeding free pancakes to anybody who could actually make it to your place?
Yes, and free coffee, yes.
Do you have a hurricane plan for Sunday?
Oh, yes, lots of free coffee. Hot chocolate this time, hot chocolate.
That's good. And IHOP, just to be clear, is not an Apple product.
No, it's not.
So what do you want to say about leadership?
Well, I'm a micromanager. My staff tells me this all of the time. They think I'm a micromanager. Oh, Gina, give us a break. Well, there's a reason why I'm a micromanager, because I am entrenched in all of the details, especially when you're dealing with the public. I sort of have in my mind the experience I want the customers to have when they come into my IHOP. So I'm constantly thinking about it. Is this customer happy? Is this customer happy? Is the staff doing the right thing? So I have no choice but to be so entrenched in the detail that I can help it, that I have to check everything to make sure everything is working together.
How can you do that as the manager of a franchise where the menu and so many other things are standardized by the national parent company?
Very, very easy. I think the reason why my IHOP has been very successful is because I sort of cater to my community. So if you come in my restaurant, you say, you know what, Dina, I want a big stick, but I want to take this out, add this in, I'm going to oblige. I'm going to do whatever that you want me to do to make sure you have a pleasure experience in my restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So I run my restaurant very, like a mom and pop. I know most of my customers, they know me. So it's a franchise, yes, but I run it like it's a mom and pop.
I hear you. Do you sell that two low-cal entrees for $7.99 thing? Oh, never mind. Thank you. Adina, keep making your voice heard here, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Brian, one of the things that she's saying that I think relates to Steve Jobs could get away with being a micromanager and get away with being unpleasant and insulting to employees because he had authority. And he had authority because he knew what he was doing. And Apple had this great success. And if you worked at Apple, you made a lot of money on your stock. And that grants you an authority that people, it gives you permission to behave sometimes. sometimes in bad ways.
Jay from Queens on our site says, what other company heads have captured the imagination, in Apple's case literally, of a global audience in the same way that Steve Jobs has? He's asking, who else has done this? I'm 50 years old and can't think of any. Can you?
People who've captured internet, well, I think Google has.
Captured the imagination.
Oh, I think Google has captured
the global.
I don't think in the same way Apple. I mean, I think the amazing thing about Apple, among the amazing things about Apple to me, this is a company that begins in the early 80s as an outsider, as a kind of a pirate, if you will. I mean, their first campaign was this TV ad, the campaign against IBM, and then they launched campaigns after that against Microsoft. And here we are decades later, and Apple is still perceived, as successful as it is.
And innovative.
And as innovative as it's still perceived as an outsider.
Yeah.
And people, if you go to China, where I was last spring, and people long to hold Apple products. Because why? Because they're cool. Because they're not established. And he somehow managed to do that, and it's quite extraordinary.
We've got to bring in a little skepticism here. So here's Rick in Englewood. You're on WNYC. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks
Good.
For taking the call.
Sure.
The issue, I think, is multifaceted in that Steve Jobs and Apple also, in many cases, work against their client base as well in their innovative, what you would call innovative technologies. I edit television and documentaries. I use Apple software, which they change without consultation and, in essence, work against us and force the client base to buy products that we don't necessarily want to buy. And I think that is something that has to be considered, too. You're praising him so much, but at the same time, think about the clients that have to spend their money to buy products that they don't necessarily want or need to buy.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. And I have had the same experience just recently, being the recent owner of an iPad, to discover that I have to buy a whole other printer for it to be compatible with than I use for my MacBook.
You also have issues like the Apple products tend to be more expensive.
Right.
Than other products.
Right.
You also have issues that he decides arbitrarily not to have Adobe Flash. So if you want to download a lot of videos, you can't do it on an Apple.
But that means product. That we just have 20 seconds left, that in addition to this unbelievable admiration for and even thankfulness for Jobs and company for producing the iPod and these other things that, you know, that people are so glad they have, there's got to be backlash out there against Apple as being the man.
No question, but on the other hand, that is outweighed by the sense of this man's accomplishments.
And he is very sick, and we should end on that note, and that's why he's leaving the CEO position at Apple. So we wish Steve Jobs the best of health for as long as possible. And we thank Ken Auletta, staff writer for The New Yorker, and author of the Annals of Communication series, and Googled The End of the World as We Know It, the book. Steve, Ken, thanks a lot.
My pleasure, Brian.